Welcome to the Ralph Moore Podcast. Gain a leadership advantage as Ralph pulls wisdom from his bag of over 50 years' experience in planting and leading multiplying churches. Our goal is to help you live as a leader you'd want to follow. You'll learn about making disciples and planting churches, but beyond that, you'll gain practical wisdom about subjects like how to manage your team, handling difficult people, pulling a congregation off a growth plateau, and even money management.
When you said that you raised people up and you sent out, you know, all these church plants, you said we had about six that we were developing at a time. What did that look like? I know that I also read, the ring and like holding on to the, but like what, so I know that you'd said like, is it they multiplied a mini church three times and then you asked, hey, do you want to plant a church? And that's how you come in. And then there's after that, like, I'm curious kind of, cause that is a little bit of a sticking point for us finding planters that are willing to go to a different city and kind of do their thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'd love to just hear kind of your wisdom.
So for one thing, they were always in leadership development as they were leading the what we called mini church. There was in the beginning, it was every week on Tuesday night, and then they backed down to every other week. So big church, a couple thousand people, 25 on staff, including the landscape guys, four guys who did janitor and landscape because we had big campus. We were 17 years in a public school, and then we ended up with 12 acres of ground, only 4 acres we could turn into buildable land. But there was tons of, I mean, we had wild hogs that would come in and root up the landscape. This is Hawaii. There's wild pigs everywhere. But everybody, including the gardeners, would come in on Tuesday mornings, and we called it discipleship time, and it was just this 25 of us, and we would have read a chapter that week in a book that I chose. I didn't reserve much power to myself. The two things that I always held onto is if you're going to go and plant a church, I have absolute veto over who can go with you or not. And the only time I ever said no was once in all of 50 years of doing this. One guy, John Honnold, was going to take a guy named Mike Kai with him to go plant a church. And John was discipling Mike, so it was a natural thing. But Mike was dating our children's church pastor, Lisa. And I thought, if Mike goes, Lisa will go. We can't afford that. So that's the only time I said, I have the right, you're not taking Mike with you. Today, Mike pastors the biggest church in Hawaii. And we're very proud of him, what he's done. And so that's an exciting thing. The other thing that I reserved for myself was, I get to choose the books that we read. And so we may read, we didn't read church leadership books. We'd read leadership books, quite often by secular authors. Sometimes they'd be Christian. We'd read a lot of history together. History of movements, but we knew a lot about Winston Churchill. I wanted people, so we're just always developing. So if you're in this, like one of my friends, we're just together. He lives in Orlando now, but he graduated from Fuller, went out to be a pastor in Hawaii. We knew each other in California. It got into contention with this church because they were a little church trying to be a big legacy church, and he was trying to do what you guys are doing, and they fired him. The day that they fired him, I told him, Dennis, you need to go in and quit because he kept moaning about what was going on. I go, that guy's going to fire you if you don't quit. So quit now. And I'm going to work it all out. And that day he got fired. Anyway, we were just together. But he went to work for the Postal Service, and he led many churches in our church. And we asked him, do you want to go plant? And he said, no. And so we were together for, 35 years. And he told me one day, he goes, I've read three times as many books leading mini church as I read in the time that I was at Fuller Seminary. You're doing a good thing with these guys. So there's this ongoing training. Then if they say yes, they want to go plant, then I personally would start to meet with them. This is why I'm kind of in awe of the generation that's coming up that are multiplying churches, because I'm hearing what's his name? J.D. Greer. They're putting out like 10, 20 churches a year. It's amazing. Big mega church. But it's amazing to me. I couldn't do that. I can't design the mechanics. I'm just too, it's got to be relational and whatever. And so I would just meet with people. So we were, over time, I don't know when we did this, but In terms of first generation churches, churches coming out of ours, we did about 1.5 churches per year over a 10-year period. So it was never very fast. It was just that we were resolute and we kept doing it and doing it. And we did a pretty good job of inculcating people with the value of reproduction and multiplication. And a lot of ours, frankly, are one and done. They went out and they never started another church. Or, there's one guy who went into Waianae, which is real local Hawaiian. He's a skinny Japanese American guy. And he prayed, God, give me elders who are big men, because they're big people out there. And he'd show up at a pastor's conference. It's like, it looks like the mafia came in with him. He's surrounded by these hulking guys. But he planted there. And the second Sunday he was there, he told them, I'm only going to be here for like 18 months, and then I'm leaving you, and I'm going to raise one of you up to be my successor. And they all went for it. And so then he goes into another town, again, a heavy local population, not very Christian at all. And on the first Sunday, he stands up and says, I'm going to be your pastor for 6 months, and then this guy will lead the church after that. And he moved on, and he started a third church, and he's been there ever since. So He was good for three. A lot of them are good for one. Others, there's a kid that left Hermosa. I say kid, he was 20 years old. I wrote about this in the book, Let Go of the Ring, but Jeff Fisher comes to me at age 20, about 6 months before I was going to move to Hawaii, and goes, I've been coming to your church for 4 years. I didn't even know him. I only come on Sunday nights. I got 45 of my friends are here tonight, and we live 50 miles away. We don't have enough cars to bring all of our friends. You need to start a church where we live. And I go, we're not doing that. Sorry. You're going to start a church where you live. And he goes, but I'm 20 years old. And I go, I don't think you understood what I just said. You're going to start a church where you live. So we hired Dale Yancey, who was our youth pastor. We sent him out there and paid Dale to babysit Jeff. That's the most productive line of churches that we've ever planted. We know of 400 or 500 churches. In one place in New England, they go 9 generations deep. And one of those churches in New England, it goes from me to Jeff to Dale to Tom. So that's a fourth generation Hope Chapel. I think they call it Faith Chapel or something. But anyway, he and another guy who's in the Free Methodists have started a training deal. They've started a movement. Now they're reaching several thousand churches that we wouldn't count as ours. So this thing just keeps going. But I think the answer to your question, I ramble a lot when I give answers because I'm old and I got a lot of stories. But I think that there has to be somebody of substance who spends one-on-one time with these people as they go out the door. If you try to do it institutionally and just make it into a program, then you're going to fall by the wayside very quickly. I think one of the things that's so important about the Tampa Underground is the relational aspect to this. And then this business of we believe in you. You know, I love it when I go to Tampa and I hear Brian guys and they're all talking about all the different levels of, you know, that I can't remember their terminology, but you want to plant a microchurch, so we call you that kind of a microchurch planter, or you got 2 or 3 people, and there's that. And, you know, it's just, I love this, but I know that everything about what they're doing is FaceTime. They're relational. I think it's crucial.
Which I think, Matt, what you're hitting on is to really, because we're asking, we're trying to have eyes to see who are that are with that type of wire, gifted, that are curious, that are willing to say yes, identifying, I think what you're saying, Ralph, because we are, you know, I had no idea I loved church until I felt like God was called. I was part of a church planting team and I was part of the mix, but I never pictured myself. But then God told me to do it. I had all the support in the world from our church. And I was like, oh, so it's finding people that have that type of wiring, but don't know that they might want to do this, and helping them and in relationship with them so we can raise them up, able to be those planters. And our whole church model is very, what we want to make it is very relational, not like a thing. Yes, we want to make sure people are equipped and have the right things, and all that stuff is very important. But I think that's where we're kind of like in a standstill of sorts. It's like, how do we, you know, like, what is it? And I think the relational, it's like just doubling down on that and having the right eyes and all of us look out.
There's two things that I want to say to that. One is that they have to already be doing something. You know, when I was a youth pastor. I was also the Sunday school director, while I was in college. And I would have people every week, somebody didn't show up. And we're running Cradle to the Grave Sunday school in a church of 160 people. And so I got a second grade boys Sunday school class. And Matt, the teacher, never showed up today. Can I give you this book? And you got 20 minutes to study the lesson and go in there and teach it. So what we decided was, let's turn this into four jobs, this one job. So there'll be the person who presents a lesson. There'll be the person that comes with the paper and the glue and the cotton so they can make sheep, And then there'll be the person whose job is to befriend the little kid who had a hard time with his stepdad that week and is disruptive. And then there's the cookie and juice person. So you got four people. It's very easy to recruit cookie and juice people. So we always recruit the bottom. So if the teacher isn't there or the craftsperson isn't there, then that team gets one of their friends to come in and do cookies and juice, and everybody moves up the ladder. So we did the same thing in our mini church. We would bring in, everybody had to have two apprentice leaders.
Yeah.
We called the leader pastor, and we wanted them to do weddings and baptisms and as much as they could away from us. And then you get two apprentices, you add a third apprentice when you're getting ready to go start a new one, all that. So everything we did in our church, you can't come to any training event we do. That's reserved for people who are already doing stuff. So instead, most churches, it's like the church I'm attending right now, we're promoting this big thing. We're going to have a leadership development day, and we try to get new people to come. Then we're going to recruit you to go do something. And we flipped it upside down and said, if you're not doing something, you don't get to come. And now if you can't come to something, everybody wants to come. So that worked really well for us. So they had to already be in process. The other thing that I was looking for is, who's a disruptor? Who are the staff complaining about on Tuesdays? And is after our discipleship, we have staff. And who are they griping about this week? Because I want to probably get to know that person, because that's where we found the apostolic people.
Yes.
As a young person, I am socially an introvert. If we're talking, I'll talk your face off. But if I don't know you, I don't know what to say. In fact, we sat behind you.
Matt's the same.
I interrupted you because I was trying to plug my phone into the wall so I could record Chesley. But my wife is the one who started talking to you. And that's the way it works in our house. And so I would be sitting around being angry about things that I saw in church. I remember once when I was in probably the sixth grade, and the lady who ran the Sunday school complained to somebody. I was in a church of 1,300 people. And so Sunday school is a big deal. The lady who ran the Sunday school, this is 1950. So I'm going to church in a little suit and tie, because that's what you did in the 1950s. And this kid who came on the Sunday school bus was in jeans and tennis shoes, and they were worn over tennis shoes. And the lady's going, these bus kids, don't they know better about coming to God's house than to wear tennis shoes? Inside of me, I hated that woman. I mean, I hated her. And I hated her for the rest of the time that I was in the church, for the next 13 years or whatever it was. And so I'd see these things. Well, then as I got old enough to be disruptive, then I started being disruptive. And I picked up this reputation of being a rebel in the denomination I was in. And, but I'm not a rebel. It's just that there's a better way. There's a New Testament way, not that way. So what I was always looking for is, who's that other guy or girl?
Ralph. That's right.
Yep. They're causing trouble. And I want to get to know them, because, I mean, there's people who are causing trouble that's real trouble, but there's other people that are causing trouble that we need badly. And I want to know those people. I make it my business to know.
Can I ask one more follow-up question?
Sure.
In those leadership meetings, you talked about reading a book. Did you kind of do, and I had kind of researched some of your stuff, like just that, like the leadership huddle where you do like relational check-in, accountability and telling, kind of leadership development. And then you kind of ask those key questions. What did the Spirit say? What are you going to do about it? And then have some kind of missional question of like, hey, who are you disciple evangelizing?
The missional question was always, who are you discipling? Who's in line to take your job? One of the things that we always, and we'd ask it, I mean, there was never, I mean, for sure in performance reviews, and our people love performance evaluations, by the way. A lot of people, I hate that. We made it fun, but it was heavy accountability. There's one guy who I love to death. His name is Alan, and he was with us for, I don't know how long, but he would just never produce. He was just real. He was Mr. Friendship. After I can't remember if he quit or I fired him, but I remember the last performance review, he had accomplished almost none of the goals. They set their own goals and they graded their goals as to difficulty, and their salary would either raise or not raise depending on if they, what percent accomplished and what percent of difficulty they put on it. And so I meet with him, and he had accomplished almost nothing. And so I go, you know, Alan, the next time that you're going to come into a review like this with nothing accomplished, you better just don't even come in here. Just come tell me that you're resigning. And so one Sunday, I come in from a trip. I'd been overseas, and I come in, and it's reviews are going to be that week. And Alan comes up to me and he goes, can we talk in your office? And so he brought the paper with him, his review form, and he showed it to me, and it was zero on four different goals. We allowed them to, we asked them to set three goals for the next 6 months. Sometimes we did it for four times a year. Sometimes we did it six times or twice a year. But I think in this case, it was 6 months. And he had said, and if they came in with six, we forced them to reduce it to five. We'd let them stretch it to five, but we'd never take six or seven or eight goals because you just unfocused. But he had four goals, and all of them he had written zero on the paper. And so I go, well, you know what this means? And he goes, yeah, that's why I wanted to meet with you. So I don't know if he quit or I fired him. All I know is that he stayed in the church and everybody loves him. And he finally, after being one of his personal goals, because we had those on our reviews, one of them was to finish school and get a teaching credential. And he'd almost finished university when we hired him, and then he quit going to school. And so the last time that I saw him, I just saw him. It was in Honolulu at somebody's funeral, and I saw him, and it was a really good time. But the time before that was the air conditioning went down at the high school where he teaches. And my wife and I went out and bought six fans for his classroom and took them over and delivered them to him. And he's telling me he is so happy that he doesn't work for the church anymore. He was made to be a high school teacher. But I think so this question of who are you discipling, or who, we always would ask who's going to take your job. Everybody had to always have one person that if you die in an airplane crash, we know that's the person that you, not necessarily we're going to hire them, but they're the person you think we should hire. And so those are the kinds of things that would come up in that. But the body of what we did was we would get together. We actually would meet on the campus, and there'd be maybe 100, and we got 105 micro churches, mini churches. There's maybe 160 people at the meet because some guys are bringing their apprentice. And we sing a song or two, just mostly, you know, they called it worship. I called it giving them time to get there. Right. So we sing a song or two. They got to be connected to me somehow. They got to feel connected to me, because when it was less than 30 people, I ran the whole meeting with everybody around the book we'd read. But as it got bigger, then staff had to do it. So I'm discipling staff over the book. They're each discipling clusters of mini church pastors. So we would meet together, sing a couple songs. I'd get up and say something about the book, and then they'd break up. And then it was, how's it going? What are you doing? You know, who are you discipling? And what did the Spirit say to you while you were reading? Because now they're reading two chapters in 2 weeks. And what are you going to do because of what the Spirit told you? And that's the meeting. It was very, very simple. But it was very, very productive for us. You know, we always ask in the mini church, we ask three questions about this tied to the Sunday thing. What did the Spirit say to you while the person was talking? So we're learning to hear God, not the past. Second, what are you going to do? We're learning to obey God. Third question is, how can we help you? And we saw spiritual gifts begin to emerge. We never asked the fourth question that somebody else taught me. And you should write this one down. The fourth question is, who else should you tell what you've just told us? Mm-hmm. Because now they're liable to recruit their friend. There's all, you know, to help them do whatever they're doing. This broadens the footprint of the leadership base in the church. And we were just asking this of regular members. So sometimes this resulted in evangelism. I should tell the person that I know at work what I just, you know. I always tease pastors about this, but you can imagine if you ask those questions, what did the Spirit say to you and what are you going to do about it after you taught on tithing? It has a material effect on the church. Why wouldn't you do that?
I think that was like one of the biggest takeaways coming out of Ralph was the opportunity for us to make our discipleship pipeline more simplistic, more accessible. We're creating like and adjusting a lot of different things because the simplicity of that, we want to have more multiplication. And we do have multiplications every year, and God has been very good, but we're like, it's too hard sometimes. Like, why aren't we seeing more multiplications when we're really looking at it? And we think the approach is a big piece of that. I mean, Lord willing, I'm trying to sell my house in Tampa. Lord willing, we'll be moving to Orlando in the summer again. And when I'm thinking micro, macro expression, the micro expression of what we're going to do on a weekly or biweekly basis is that, you know, like talking about what we saw on Sunday, but through this model and really testing this out. Like Matt and I are testing these out in our different cities and all these with all of this, but I'm like, ooh, this is such a fun opportunity to really put this into action, see location, Lord willing, at a level we haven't seen before. So yeah, it was like a light bulb that came off for both Matt and I when we were in your session.
Oh, that's good. I really appreciate that. And I am going to put this on YouTube. We're going to put it up in the podcast. It'll probably be 3 or 4 podcasts. But I want to be careful about the question I'm about to ask you, because you don't want stalkers. But if somebody has questions and they want to communicate with you, is there a way through Greenhouse Churches that you could give us first information about the movement, but also how they could contact you personally through that email address? Can you give us that right now?
Sure. Yeah. Christine and myself are both probably the easiest people to talk to, because we're the ones who are kind of most like just kind of boots on the ground on a staff side. But yeah, it's our first letter of our name and our last name. So mulrich@greenhousechurch.org. And same to the poll.
So spell Ulrich so everybody knows how.
U-L-R-I-C-H.
Okay. So mulrich@greenhousechurch.com. .org. Sorry. And Christine Sepulveda at greenhousechurch.org. Very good.
Yeah. Thank you. And our website, greenhousechurch.org, is like, there's a bunch of stuff there. And we're in the midst of working on a lot of stuff. More to come.
Good. Very good. I'm excited. It's like I'm meeting people that are going to allow me to go to my grave in peace. It's really fun. For the last 10 years, it's looked kind of bleak. And, I got to know Brian Sanders pretty well through Exponential. They kind of partnered us in a lot of things that we did for a while. And I always like to tease Brian about he's the most loving and most abrasive person you'll ever meet at the same time. But I just love that guy to pieces. But I saw a lot of pushback and it was mostly pushback from confusion. I don't know how he would do this. So I'm not buying into it. And I really think if we're going to touch Gen Z, it's not going to be in a legacy church. I get all frustrated and judgmental toward the people who are doing sites and video and all that kind of stuff. But if you're doing the micro church attached to the site, then you got the relational thing going. And if you can keep the missional part, then the sites are wonderful. That's been a revelation to me. But where I felt like coming out of, I left Hawaii in 2018 and I came to San Diego, which is kind of a spiritual desert. And that's been kind of hard. One of the guys from our church in Kaneohe planted here in San Diego in late 2018. We helped them for a while, but it's far from our house, so we don't go there now. But it's just been kind of difficult seeing people that should be buying in. And we're seeing it in Exponential, but a lot of it is not happening in California. And so knowing that Florida is kind of a rising influence in the country, and seeing people like you and seeing now what they're doing in Hawaii, there's actually several movements that have come to Hawaii now that are trying to plant across the islands. One guy planted 3 microchurches in Malibu, California, behind the gate. And those churches all burned because they were house churches. And, if you got a couple $1 million, you can't plant behind the gate in Malibu because you couldn't afford to buy anything. But if you go to the coffee shop across the street and start with the people you meet, then you can move the microchurch into somebody's house behind the gate. But the Palisades fire took out 3 of those houses. Well, that guy, Nico, is in Hawaii now. And he's trying to put a microchurch in every community of a certain size in Hawaii. So I just am excited that there are young people who are doing what we did a long time ago and doing it better than we probably ever did. I'm excited to hear that.
And we've loved learning. I was going to say, we've loved learning from you, kind of gleaning from your decades of wisdom. This has been just so, so helpful. Even just your Exponential talk and even talk to you right now have just, my mind is whirling with different things that I think help streamline and make it simple so that it's just accessible to everybody. Everybody can. We're very, very thankful for your legacy and what you're doing, Ralph. I mean, there really is fruit that's going to remain from even just your commitment to the Great Commission for
that. Thank you.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe and check his blog at ralphmoore.net.